My name is Allison Harix, and I completed my PhD in history at UConn in May 2016. And I currently work as a park ranger at Lowell National Historical Park in Lowell, Massachusetts.
And I'm Mary Mahoney. I completed my PhD in history at UConn in May of 2018. And I'm now a Mellon Postdoctoral Fellow in Digital Humanities at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut.
Very cool. And you both are co-hosts of the American Girls podcast, which is why you're here. When I mentioned to my coworker who was helping me with the phone stuff that I was interviewing you guys, he was like, every time you say that, I think of my daughter's dolls. And I'm like, well, that's what it is. So part of the appeal of the podcast is that it's sort of an unexpected topic and approach. How did you come up with this idea?
I think part of it comes from the genesis of our friendship, which was we both decided to do this sort of non-traditional thing to go and write into our PhDs around the same time. And we were discovering a lot of new kinds of knowledge, a lot of new topics and approaches, but we had this bond over these dolls and these stories that we both loved as children. And it was kind of this nice connective tissue. And I think also served as a signal that we took our work, but not ourselves, that seriously.
I think not only is it a sign that we take our work, but not ourselves seriously, but also that we're comfortable using pop culture as a language to understand our own experiences in the same way that we think with history in a very similar way. So, I think that's been instructive of our friendship at the beginning and of the show we make now.
And other than becoming friends at UConn, is there anything else about your time here that kind of informed the way that you do this podcast?
Well, I think back to my time at UConn and the fact that I taught the entire time I was there. And I think just reflecting back on using pop culture, I think a lot of times when people enter graduate programs, it's because they've been heavily influenced by research they did as an undergraduate or monographs they read. But often when students take introductory survey courses, which is mostly what I taught at UConn, they're drawn they have no exposure to that kind of scholarship. They're drawn instead by things in pop culture that engage history, that are of interest to them, or at least pique their curiosity. So often I would use things in pop culture that might be common to most of us and use that as an entry point or a way in to think with history in a new and different way, possibly for them. So that's something that I did as a teacher at UConn and Allison did as well. That is something we use in creating our show now.
Yeah, it's such a great blend of kind of current events, pop culture from now and when the books were written, and then the history of what's happening in the books. And it's just really cool that, you know, you use something that you and many people, including myself, our age, loved as kids, but you're approaching it from your new adult perspective and this historical perspective. So what kind of goals did you guys have when you set out to do this, and have they evolved over time?
I think we were hopeful that people would listen and that it would resonate with people on some level. Something that helped early on was we both attended a conference in Hartford and meeting other people who loved history, who were listening and felt like they connected with it was great. I think the thing that's really exceeded my expectations is people who maybe loved certain kinds of stories or loved history as kids, but felt like that is something they got a little bit away from, who've now rediscovered that spark as adults. That audience, I think, has been so exciting for us to connect with.
Yeah, I mean, I think for myself, I had the most modest goal of making this show as a reward for finishing grad school. And hoping someday I would finish grad school, because we knew that the time involved would not make it a thing that was possible necessarily while we were still finishing our program. And I finished a year or two after Allison. So it was just really fun for Allison and I to have this shared time together, have a reason to spend time together every other week recording. And like Allison said, I think we hoped that people would listen. And initially I just hoped it would be some of our friends listening, and to now have the listeners that we do, it's really stunning in ways that I can't even express. I mean, Allison and I have received letters from people who say, you know, I'm currently being treated for cancer and I listen to your show while I'm getting my chemo and it makes me smile. It's like, you know, we record the show in our living rooms in sweatpants and people are taking us with them in these very serious scenes in their lives. So it's a really intimate medium that people have treated as such. And I think that's both gratifying and really humbling.
That's amazing. I was going to talk about the community that you guys have kind of built. I looked at all the reviews you guys have gotten on Apple Podcasts and then your Facebook and Instagram kind of communities. And it's both kind of that nostalgia factor that we all are really hyped up on these days, especially for us like 90s kids. And then the current topics that you guys get to talk about. Like, I was just listening to one of the Kirsten episodes about immigration, and you talk about Josefina and, you know, the racial aspect of that. So there's just so many different things you guys can pull in. And it's both, we get to know you a little bit, your funny pop culture asides, and it just becomes this whole community. So what has that been like? Is there more, any more you wanted to say about that? You kind of touched on it already, but I was going to ask you about that anyway.
It's bonkers. It's actually a lot of fun. We get emails, we get voicemails, we have a Google Drive where people can share their stories. So we hear from people in every possible medium. And I've said that we feel really fortunate that pretty much every time we click on a blurred image that comes through a private DM, it's a girl with a doll, which is not something a lot of people
not what
have
you think.
As a social media experience. And, you know, as Mary is saying, we were both really touched this weekend with someone reaching out to us about, you know, listening through treatment. We had a lot of really strong responses to our episode on Josefina and grief. Mm-hmm. And that was honestly really intense because you don't picture people listening to this thing that you make in those moments and finding it helpful, because for us, it's a conversation that is recorded and edited and put out there. And we consume a lot of podcasts, but you don't actually know how people are reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And people take time to then write you a 5-paragraph email. And that is so gratifying, as Mary said.
That's awesome. You're really touching people. Even, you know, it's about dolls and books, and it's about so much more than that. What are some of the most valuable lessons you've discovered in the books as you've revisited them as adults?
We know we don't want to make apple butter. We know that.
We know that's beyond us. We do know that's beyond us. Yeah, it's taught us about our limits, for sure.
I mean, we've talked about this a lot, but we talk about, you know, who is and who is not a good friend, or who gets to be seen and valued as a friend. In the book, a thing I keep coming back to is both in some ways the lack of action in Josefina's stories, and on another level, the fact that she's just this deeply empathetic little girl who comes from a background where there's not a lot of stories about young girls from the borderlands in the 1820s. And there's, you know, 300 pages worth of content about her feelings. We had some challenges with those books because there aren't a ton of historical events, but there's something really provocative about that, you know, that girls all over the country are delving that deeply into her story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think something that we value too, and that the books kind of highlight, is the importance of taking yourself seriously and the idea of creating yourself and constantly evolving. And, you know, as Allison was saying, in the Josefina books, there's not a lot of historical events that we could delve into, but you know, she is moving through really serious grief of the loss of a parent. She's trying to figure out who she is and how she fits in her family and what things she's interested in. And, you know, as Margaret Lyons wrote in her piece about our show, I think something that's important about the books, and hopefully about the way that we talk about them, is that it takes seriously the idea that both the girls in these books are creating themselves, but also the adults now rereading them as adults. You know, we can still take that idea seriously. We're not done. You know, it's not just like when you're a girl, you get to think about what you want to be when you grow up. When you're actually already grown up, that process is still happening. So you can keep creating and recreating yourself and evolving. It's not something to apologize for. It's something to embrace. And I think the books have let our listeners do that in really interesting ways.
I was going to ask you, I know because I've read about you, but which American girl you identify with. But then I was listening to your last episode and how you talked about, I think it was probably Helder, who I know from Trinity, was asking you about, you know, to explain why you guys say you're Mollies to people who don't get it, but it's so part of you. I thought that was a hilarious commentary on this whole thing.
You know, it's Molly is the only answer, even as we can't fully explain why. And, you know, I think we both are still pretty firm on that, right, Allison?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't try to fail my eye exam for nothing. I wanted to fail. I'm serious. I wanted to fail that exam because I wanted to look more like my doll. And now, in a reversal of fortunes, you know, I still have the bangs. She still has the bangs. I'm both, you know, I'm cutting them for us both. Now I have the glasses and hers are lost.
Oh.
So it's like we've both grown up, you know?
It's really heavy.
Also, credit to Allison for working in the fact that she stress cuts her own bangs in this interview. But, you know, I mean, I'm not wearing saddle shoes almost every day for no reason. I mean, we're doing what we can with what we have, and we're kind of failing to measure up to Molly, but, you know, it's the climb, as Miley would say.
That's awesome. I do identify with Molly as well, but I had Samantha growing up. One of my most traumatic events as a child was my brother colored all over her and left her naked body in my closet. Yep.
God.
So, I mean, you know, it's
did
real.
Did you pay for the counseling or?
No, my parents, I was really spoiled and they bought me a new one.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, you know, this stuff is real. But no, Samantha was not what I aspired to be by any means. And Julie came after. Julie is probably my most, you know, she has my name. She's a hippie, but she came after I kind of outgrew the doll situation.
We went to a visit to the American Girl store. They invited us down very nicely. Everyone we met was wonderful. Everyone we worked with was wonderful. And they have a new space there that's all dedicated to Julie and her time. So I recommend you check it out because, you know, like the basketball of it all, the disco. I mean, in many ways, she brings together things I love. So I get it.
That's awesome. I did go there a few years ago. I'll have to go back. That's so great. You mentioned the New York Times piece. Did you ever think you would be in the New York Times for something like this?
I never thought that I would be featured in newspapers with a photo of me holding my doll with her hat on backwards. I did not think that would be it. I think it's better than being featured in other parts of the newspaper, but no.
The crime report? Is that where you thought you saw yourself? It's a shock. But both of us still can't believe it. I mean, it's kind of beyond my own conception of what this show would ever do or be. I never thought I would be in the New York Times ever in my life.
Well, congratulations. And it's very cool that you have this UConn connection because we can, you know, lay a little claim on you and that you broke through the clutter of podcasts and have this one that's actually resonating with people. So well done.
No, I think we should have like a subline somewhere that thanks the red line, because maybe if it had functioned better, we would have talked less on our long walks and rides to our car. Because I think if you knew us then, the show is basically like the way that we talk together. So I feel like the red line and those kinds of times started the formula for this.
Thank
you to UConn buses for not showing up often. And we would walk in from W lot together and have conversations that basically prepared us to host this show.